We are about to challenge jury charge 201, basics beyond doubt, at 225 words per minute. If you want to make a note of a start and end time at the 5-minute mark, that would be good because this will be longer than 5 minutes. Let's begin. Members of the jury, we have now reached the stage of this trial when, after my charge to you, you will retire to the jury room to deliberate and decide whether the accused is guilty of the offenses with which he is charged. I will divide my charge into several parts, which I hope will make it easier for you to follow. Firstly, I will deal with the general concepts applicable to the trial of a criminal case by judge and jury. I will then deal with the law pertaining to the charges against the accused, and I will review and make some comments on the facts and on the positions taken by the Crown and the accused. I will then briefly advise you as to your duties in the jury room. The 12 of you are the judges in this case. Together we constitute the court. My function is to advise you as to the law. You must accept my advice in that regard and apply the law as I shall state it to you. You are the sole judges of the facts. It is your function and your function alone to decide what facts have been proven in this case from the evidence which you have heard and to decide what inferences are to be drawn from the facts. Please appoint one amongst you to chair your discussions. He or she will assist you in arriving at your verdict in an orderly and businesslike manner and will report your verdict to the court. You alone will decide what evidence you believe and what evidence you do not believe. You will decide on the whole of the evidence whether the accused is guilty or not guilty of the charges that I have read to you. Your duty to the community is to ascertain if a crime was committed and whether the accused committed those crimes. You have a responsibility to the accused to ensure that he is not improperly convicted. In approaching your task, you must be entirely impartial. You must decide on the guilt or innocence of the accused without fear, sympathy, or prejudice of any kind whatsoever. If you have heard or read anything about this matter outside of this courtroom, you must now banish it from your mind. You must decide solely on the evidence that you have heard during this trial. The evidence does not have to answer every question raised in this case. It would be an unusual case in which a jury could say, "We know everything there is to know about this case. You have all the evidence before you that you are entitled to receive, and it is on that evidence alone that you make your decision." In making your decision, you have to decide those matters that are essential for you to say whether the crime has been proven beyond a reasonable doubt. In my charge to you, I may express an opinion about certain evidence or state that something has been proven. If I do so, you are not bound by any opinion which I may express. Similarly, you should give careful consideration to the submissions made to you on the facts by both counsel. However, you are not bound by any opinions they express. Nothing is proven as a fact until you, the jury, find it to be so. A verdict, whether of guilty or not guilty, is the unanimous opinion of the whole jury. To return a verdict in this case requires that all of you agree on what your verdict should be. Everyone should give fair, impartial, and equal consideration to all the evidence. Your goal should be to reach an agreement that matches the individual judgment of each juror. You must not agree, however, only for the purpose of returning a unanimous verdict. It is your duty to consult with one another and to deliberate with a view to reaching a just verdict according to the evidence and the law as I have explained it to you. Each of you must make your own separate decision as to whether the accused is guilty of the charges he faces. You should only make this decision after carefully considering the evidence with your fellow jurors, and you should not hesitate to change your mind if you are convinced that your initial impression was wrong. You should only deliberate when you are together in the jury room. I do not intend to extensively review the evidence with you. Merely because I do not mention certain evidence, do not consider that it is not important. You must consider all of the evidence, whether I refer to it or not. There is a very important rule of law which applies in this case as it does in every criminal case. This rule is known as the presumption of innocence. The accused is presumed to be innocent of the crimes charged until the Crown has proven his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The presumption of innocence and the burden of proof in a criminal case are inseparable. The burden of proving the guilt of the accused beyond a reasonable doubt rests with the Crown, and that burden never shifts. The Crown must prove each and every element of the offense beyond a reasonable doubt. The accused does not need to prove anything in this case. In particular, he need not prove that he is innocent of the crimes charged. From start to finish, it is the Crown who must prove the guilt of the accused beyond a reasonable doubt. You must find the accused not guilty of the crimes charged unless the Crown proves beyond a reasonable doubt that he is guilty of them. Now, what is meant by proof beyond a reasonable doubt? By reasonable doubt, we do not mean an imaginary or frivolous doubt. It is not a doubt based on sympathy or prejudice. A reasonable doubt is an honest and fair doubt doubt, a doubt based upon reason and common sense, a real doubt which arises from evidence or lack of evidence and not from any conjecture or speculation. Even if you believe that the accused is probably or likely guilty, that is not enough. In those circumstances, you would find the accused not guilty because the Crown has failed to satisfy you of the accused's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Proof of a probable or likely doubt is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. On a spectrum, the standard of proof beyond a reasonable doubt falls much closer to absolute certainty than to proof on a balance of probabilities. On the other hand, you must remember that it is virtually impossible to prove anything to an absolute certainty, and the Crown is not required to do so. Absolute certainty is a standard of proof that is impossibly high. If at the end of the case, based upon the evidence before the court, you are sure that the accused committed the offenses, you would find the accused guilty because this means that you are satisfied of his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. If at the end of the case, based upon all the evidence or lack of evidence before the court, you are not sure that the accused committed the offenses, you must find him not guilty of the charges before you. To make your decision, you should consider carefully and with an open mind all the evidence presented during the trial. It will be up to you to decide how much or how little of the testimony of any witness you will believe or rely on. You may believe some, none, or all of the evidence given by a witness. Witnesses see and hear things differently. Conflicts and discrepancies do not necessarily mean that testimony should be discredited. Discrepancies in the reasonable doubt test applies only to proof of the guilt of the accused and proof of the essential elements of the offense. I will tell you later about the elements of the offense when I deal with the law applicable to the charge in this case. From the facts which you find have been proven, you may find certain other facts logically can be inferred. We sometimes refer to this as proof based on circumstantial evidence. As the jury, you are entitled to make inferences of fact which logically arise from facts you find to have been proved. Having decided what facts have been proven and what inferences are to be made, you will take all of these into account in the context of the whole of the evidence in deciding whether you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt of the guilt of the accused. The end.